The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Vic Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So some rumblings of, should the Federal Reserve raise the interest rates? Are we going to see the Fed slamming on the brakes of the massive job growth that's going on, the inflation that's out of hand? Is that what we're going to see? Well, here to talk a little bit about that and his latest article, Getting High on Interest Rates, I've asked Dean Baker. He's a macroeconomist and the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Dean, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
So I can't believe that with the job numbers that have come out, we're hearing rumblings of the Fed raising rates again, really?
Yeah, you know, it is hard for me to believe, you know, because the point, you raise rates, the Fed raises rates when it thinks the economy is growing too rapidly, that we have a real threat of inflation. And, you know, you look at the numbers and, you know, obviously things are going in the right direction, but, you know, the economy grew at less than 1% rate in the first quarter, not much better than that the last quarter of 2015. Job growth, of course, the most recent numbers is very weak. But, you know, the bottom line, you know, we look at wage growth, we go, you know, the story should be, or the story that would justify a rate hike would be that we're seeing really rapid wage growth and we're worried that that will cause inflation. And you just can't find that. I mean, wages, you know, they're rising a little more than 2% a year, and that's better than rising less than 2% a year, but that's just over the rate of inflation. And one of the points that I was making, and, you know, surely the people at the Fed should know this, part of that story is that employers have been shifting from non-wage compensation, mostly health care, to wages. That, you know, what's happening, you know, workers are being asked to pay more for their health insurance. They're getting lower quality health insurance. And the result of that, of course, is they have to pick up more money out of pocket. So, you know, that's just sloppy if they're not looking at total compensation. And the growth of total compensation has actually slowed slightly. That's only about 2%, maybe even here less. So in that context, you just go, why would the Fed be looking to raise interest rates now?
And why would they be? I mean, I keep hearing talk of potential recession around the corner, and yet we're going to do something I think could make that worse.
Yeah, I don't see a recession around the corner, but I do see us having weak growth. And, you know, I think the story here, and, you know, I've talked to some of these people, and, you know, I sort of think at some point they're more or less telling me what they believe. You take everything with a grain of salt. But I think the basic story is that they're concerned that inflation could come, and sure, inflation can come, but they just place this incredible fear of inflation, like this would be the worst thing in the world, that, you know, if the inflation rate were to rise to 2.5 or 3%, that this would just be like this horrible, horrible thing. So we have to do whatever to prevent it. And they look at the labor market and they go, well, you know, we got 5% unemployment. That's really not too bad, because a lot of them will say, well, that's, you know, 5% unemployment. That's pretty much full employment. And so to them, it's just kind of a one-sided risk. You know, I think most people would find this kind of mind-boggling, but I think a lot of these people really see that or feel that, you know, it's, we have to worry about inflation, and, you know, basically labor market's about as good as it's going to get.
Is 5% full inflation in your view? I mean, the five,
you know, I'd say no, for the simple reason that we've been below that. You know, it wasn't that long ago, 2000, we had 4% as a year-round average. There were some months where as low as 3.8%. And there was no uptick in inflation to speak of. So the idea that we couldn't get back to that, I think, is kind of far-fetched. I'm saying this having argued this over, you know, really more than two decades. I remember back in the 1990s, the early part of the decade, I was saying I thought we can get, you know, 5%, maybe lower, as an unemployment rate. And the conventional wisdom at that time was 6% was basically the floor. I mean, some people might have said 5.8 or maybe even 5.6, but you couldn't get much below 6%. That was the view that, you know, most economists, the vast majority of economists had. That turned out to be wrong, you know, because we saw that. And so my view is, well, you guys were wrong in the 1990s in a really big way, and it was kind of a fluke. I mean, I criticize Alan Greenspan lots of things, but he was very important to allow the unemployment rate. He was the one who said, let the unemployment rate keep falling. Other people at the Fed wanted to raise rates, and that turned out to be exactly right. The unemployment rate did fall, didn't have inflation. And I just don't see any reason we shouldn't try that experiment. Let's see what happens. Because, you know, again, realistically, inflation doesn't just, you know, we don't just wake up one morning and inflation rate's 20%. You know, all our models show that if, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm saying, you know, let the unemployment rate keep falling. All the models show inflation would accelerate very gradually. So, you know, you go, so what? Inflation rises to 2.5%. Then you guys could start raising interest rates. And, you know, so what? You know, what's the big deal here?
Yeah, you put the brakes on when you need to, not before you even start the car. But here's the question I have. I mean, with the 5% unemployment rate that we have now, is it the same 5% we had 30 years ago? Because, you know, I keep seeing numbers of you know, maybe up to 10% when you look at all the people who aren't even in the workforce and being counted, who would be in the workforce otherwise if there were jobs for them to have.
No, it's a very good point. And, you know, we have data on this that, you know, I'm sure the Fed's familiar with. I know the Fed's familiar with. They compile a lot of the data. The other statistics we might look at for labor market strength, you know, the number of people who are working part-time but like full-time jobs, that's very high. You know, that looks like, you know, what you'd expect if the unemployment rate were 6.5%. If you look at measures like the duration of unemployment, how long does it take you to get a new job if you leave your old job? Again, that's very high. Percentage of people who voluntarily quit their job, you know, they quit their job before they have another one lined up, it's extremely low. That suggests people are very worried about, you know, their labor market prospects. They're reluctant to leave a job till they know they have a new one. So, you know, by those measures, you know, it still looks like a very weak labor market. And probably the most important is just the number of people who are in the labor force. We've had a large number of people drop out of the labor force since the recession in 2008. And, you know, people often say it's demographics, aging baby boomers. Oh, that's a little bit of the story. But, you know, what we look at is we focus on prime age workers, people 25 to 54. These are not people retiring. And that's still down. The percentage of those workers who are employed is still down by 2 percentage points from where it was in 2007. And, you know, that's hard to explain as anything other than labor market weakness.
Now, let me ask you, is it a flaw in the setup of the Federal Reserve that they serve two masters, one of keeping inflation down and one and the other in attempting to promote full employment?
Well, I think those are, you know, it's fair to say both should be considerations, but I think the bigger problem is how the Fed's structured. So disproportionately, the banks have an enormous influence on Fed decision-making. This has to do with, you know, with the 12 regional banks, and those are essentially controlled by the banks in the region. So we have 7 appointees from the president approved by Congress, the Board of Governors, and then we have the presidents of the 12 regional banks who sit on the Federal Reserve Board's Open Market Committee. And what tends to be the case is that the bank presidents are more hawkish on interest rates because they're representing the financial industry. And, you know, again, not to try and put them in a bad light or unnecessarily put them in a bad light, from the standpoint of the financial industry, they generally don't like inflation. So, you know, they're willing to say, okay, well, you know, maybe we could do better on unemployment, but we don't want to take a risk with inflation. So let's just, you know, raise rates and make sure that we don't have any problems with inflation. So I think it's not so much that they have, you know, these two commitments. I think it's appropriate they be concerned about both unemployment and inflation. The problem, I think, is that the people on the Fed, because it is so weighted towards the banks, tend to put way too much priority on the inflation side of the story and much too little emphasis on the unemployment side.
And that's kind of where I was going, because, you know, when you look at the financial institutions, they want to make sure that the people who are in debt now pay them back with today's money and not inflated money tomorrow, because inflation helps debtors, correct?
Exactly, exactly. So for them, seeing the inflation rate, you know, I was being, you know, I wouldn't really say flippant. I mean, I really don't care. You know, if the inflation rate were to inch up, it's currently, depending which measure we use, 1.6, 1.7, somewhere around there. If that were to inch up to, you know, 2.5%, 3%, I frankly couldn't care less. I mean, it's, you know, most of us, you know, you adjust for that with wages, and it's not a big deal. But for them, you know, with the debt they have outstanding, you know, the loans they have outstanding, that really is a very bad story. So for them, that really would be something bad that they don't want to see happen.
Yeah, they don't want to see people paying off their debt. We like people under the thumb. But since you brought up debt, you know, and somebody who's great with debt, who loves debt, who's just the debt guy, I look at Donald Trump, who you've written a piece about recently, what the Donald could teach us about the national debt.
Yeah, you know, Trump made some comment, this was a couple weeks back, about, oh, he knows how to deal with debt, and, you know, you just you work out deals with your creditors, and you get them to take write-downs. And, you know, everyone's going, what are you talking about? You know, so, you know, obviously with his businesses, he had several that were facing bankruptcy, some that went into bankruptcy. And in that context, of course, you can do that. You know, his casino owes someone $50 million. It goes, well, I'm about to go bankrupt. You know, you'll know what, maybe you'll get nothing. So tell you what, how about we write it down to $25 million? Businesses could do that. The U.S. government can't. So that was just kind of silly. So he then backed away from it, and he actually said something that made a lot of sense that I'd written about a few years back, where he was saying, well, if interest rates rise, then the market value of the bonds that we have outstanding falls. So basic story is, if we, you know, we've issued long-term bonds, if we issue a 10-year Treasury bond today, it would pay something like 1.8% interest, somewhere in that neighborhood. I haven't looked at the numbers today. Now, suppose that, you know, 2 years out, 3 years out, the interest rates rise so that at that time the interest rate on 10-year Treasuries is 5%, 6%. That's actually where they were in the 90s, so that's not like crazy high rate. You know, we've seen that in the very recent past. Well, then the market value of that bond, we issued, let's say, a $10,000 bond, the market value, what that will sell for in the market, you know, say 3 years from now, might be $6,000. It will fall considerably. So if we're concerned about the value of the debt, the notional value, it's a $10,000 bond, but selling at $6,000, if we're concerned only about the notional value of the debt, what we could do is buy that bond back at $6,000 and, you know, in that way reduce value of our debt outstanding, the notional value of our debt, from $10,000 to $6,000. Now, we're still paying the exact same amount in interest because higher interest rate. But, you know, if we're sitting there going, oh, my God, the debt's so high, well, we've just knocked down, we just knocked $4,000 off the debt. We could do that on a large scale. Now, the point I made, you know, and I don't have no idea what Trump's thinking, the point I made is, well, that is kind of silly. Because, you know, at the end of the day, what we care about is the interest burden. That's, you know, not the notional value of the debt. But on the other hand, we have all these policy people, including some very prominent economists, who were very concerned about the notional value of the debt. In fact, there was a paper in 2010 by these two Harvard economists, Carmen Reinhart and Ken Rogoff, that said if the notional value, the ratio of the notional value of the debt to GDP crossed 90%, then growth would, you know, plummet, would fall through the floor. And, you know, it turned out that was driven by a mistake, an Excel spreadsheet error. But in any case, that never should have been taken seriously. And, you know, what I appreciated with Trump saying this was it helps to drive that home, that, you know, if, you know, we're concerned about the ratio of debt to GDP, that's really just a very silly concern. If we're concerned about the interest burden, well, let's talk about that. The interest burden we pay today is extremely low. It's about 0.8% of GDP. It was over 3% in the early 90s. So if we're concerned about the burden of the debt, we don't have a big burden.
Right. Now, if the Fed were to raise interest rates, would that affect what we've issued in the past?
It doesn't affect the interest burden. It does affect the market value. So that's why it allows for this sort of, you know, what I call the financial engineering. But it doesn't affect, you know, if we issued a 10-year Treasury bond in, you know, 2015 at 1.8% interest, that will pay 1.8% interest, you know, for its full 10 years till we retire the bond in 2025.
Okay, there you go. But, you know, I looked at this and I said, you know, the Donald wants to treat, you know, our government much like he treated business. And it's that frame of you can't run government like a business and do those kind of gimmicks and tricks to get us out of these things.
Yeah, and, you know, as I say, his original comment, well, you know, his original proposition, oh, I know how to work this out, you make your creditors take a discount, that's just a great example of, you know, no, this guy doesn't seem to understand. This is not, he's not running a business, you know, for his businesses, that's exactly what you want to do. For the U.S. government, no, that makes zero sense.
There you go. Last question. And what do you think the chances are come the next, I think the next one's in June, of the Fed raising the rates in June? What do you think the chances are?
I'd say about 1 in 4. I just don't think the data support it. So I think what's happened, you know, these people all make comments, you know, they have speeches and other comments with the media. I think they want to have an open door so that they at least have that possibility. But I just don't think the data is strong enough to justify it.
There you go. Dean, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Always great talking to you. Dean Baker, macroeconomist and the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. You want to check out their work? We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Dean's name. Take you right there. Quick break. Right back. In reverse.
Kids are united, they can never be divided.
But as yesterday,
there's a brand new sham today.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.